While COVID-19 vaccinations are now being rolled out for the most at risk, testing for the virus will still be vital for some time to come. Dr. Anne Wiley is a New Zealander based at Yale University who's been working on a saliva-based test called Saliva Direct. She's back in New Zealand now, currently in quarantine, preparing for a well-earned break with family. And she's with us now. Hello.
Good morning.
You will be needing a rest.
Most certainly.
Tell me about the saliva test, please. What is its advantage over the current nasopharyngeal swab?
I think the main advantage is that it offers an alternative. We developed this, quite early on, back in sort of April, May, when we had already experienced, a lot of problems with the nasopharyngeal swab. We saw supply chain issues. We know that people just do not like them. And we knew that we needed to have options for frequent repeat testing going forward. So, we just happened to be looking into saliva, found that it was working quite well. So decided to develop this test, which also, quite importantly, really dramatically decreases the price of testing.
When you say supply chain issues, you mean the gear required for the swabs and the testing of them?
Yes, indeed. So, very early on, especially when the pandemic hit, I'm in Connecticut, which is between New York and Boston, who were, affected very badly quite early on. And, universities, labs, hospitals all around the country were just scrambling to get actually even just the nasopharyngeal swab. They really fell in short demand. We were having to sort of home make our own kits for them in the end. We were looking into 3D printing options locally even just to try and find that. And, while this has, this is largely resolved, it can show us what can happen if you just rely on one sample type. So that was really important to us to sort of, again, expand our options.
So how do you identify the virus in saliva as opposed to identifying it from a swab?
It's essentially almost exactly the same way. So we are still doing, originally we started doing the same RNA extraction, which is where you can break open the virus and find its genetic material to then test by PCR. So we are still using a PCR test.
So PCR means...
Polymerase chain reaction.
And that's what's used to augment the DNA or the RNA.
Yes, that's right. You can target very specific regions of the virus RNA to find out if that exact virus is in your sample.
And is that what you're doing now with saliva?
That is. It is. It is. It's essentially what we are doing, but we found we could take out the longer, more expensive RNA extraction step in the middle and just take that very simple saliva sample and test it almost directly into PCR and get essentially the same level of sensitivity, limit of detection that we were finding with swabs or with the whole RNA extraction process.
Why can't you do that with the nasal swab material, put it directly through as opposed to carrying out that middle process?
That's actually what we get almost asked on a weekly basis, is if we can develop our tests to also do that. I mean, to be honest, we were inspired by some reports very early on of people actually trying that out. And, we've toyed with the idea of expanding our method to include, we're actually looking at the smaller nasal swab. So instead of going all the way back to, almost to your brain, as they say.
Oh, I don't want that happening.
Exactly. So, we were looking into the other nasal swab options, but, we're run off our feet as it is, just trying to implement this method, roll it out around the US. So, there's plenty of other people who are doing swab-based methods. So, again, it was just sort of, adding to that toolbox we have in this fight against COVID.
And is it as accurate?
It is. There's all sorts of levels of accuracy out there. There are different ways of measuring it. And I think, we get bogged down sometimes in this details of accuracy in terms of, it depends on how people compare their tests. What are they actually comparing it to when they're reporting on their accuracy? And one of the things for us is really just looking at the limit of detection. So actually like how few virus copies can be within you and how many of those you can actually test. And, we did a really large screening.
You mean how, how sensitive the test can be?
Yeah, indeed. So we actually did a large sort of validation study with the National Basketball Association, which was, you know, surprising in itself. But, you know, we compared our method to, they were having routine testing with a swab combined with a, it was a nasal swab combined with an oral swab. And we saw that our saliva testing performed just as well as their routine diagnostic testing in asymptomatic healthy individuals who we, you know, were screening for infection.
Did they approach you, the NBA?
They certainly did.
Because?
Yeah, so they actually found our work. Our very first work on saliva went live at the end of April, and not long after that, we actually had an email from Robbie Seeker from the Timberwolves asking to speak with us. So that was one of the very bizarre occurrences that's happened over the last few months. But yeah, we ended up having sort of weekly meetings with the NBA, and they did provide us some research funding, and we were just able to piggyback on their logistics to, you know, perform this, you know, amazing validation study, which otherwise we just would not have had the bandwidth or resources to do otherwise.
So why couldn't they just get on and have the nasal swabs?
I think, like everyone else, no one really particularly enjoys a nasal swab. So, you know, they'd seen the promise of saliva. They knew that they needed to have frequent repeat testing, you know, especially going into the bubble where they wanted to make sure that they just weren't going to have any infections or spread arising. Yeah, they also just really saw the potential for saliva like we had. So, yeah, that's why they reached out to us to see, you know, what we were doing and how they could support our efforts.
The promise of saliva, that's a phrase, isn't it? Is it possible, because I think there was some suggestion at some stage, that the saliva test could be more sensitive and therefore oversensitive? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of concern about PCR tests being oversensitive, with the idea that they can, you know, actually being here in a isolation myself, you know, we have had a couple of cases detected in the last couple of weeks and, or even the last couple of days, sorry. And, you know, they've identified these to be historical cases, so not active infection, but the idea that PCR testing can still detect the virus RNA in you, you know, for months after you, up to months after you've been infectious. We haven't, you know, we don't know how that necessarily compares with saliva, sort of where that RNA can be detected from. Indeed, it is a very sensitive test, like your nasal swab. So if you are just wanting to, you know, help prevent transmission, help prevent outbreaks, then I still think, you know, having a really great sensitive test is very important for that.
Erring on the side of caution. Can you tell me what would distinguish an historical case from a current case based on the either the swab or the saliva evidence?
So one of the things, when you do your PCR test, you do generate numbers from that, and those numbers can indicate how much virus is actually present in these individuals. So if it's a very, you know, you can tell if it's a very low presence of virus or, you know, higher presence of virus. If it's a historical case, they will just have very small trace amounts of this RNA. So if you sample them, you know, you might sample them 2, 3, 4 times over the course of a week or two. If they just continue to have very trace amounts, this suggests that it's just sort of, you know, RNA that's still in the system. If it was, you know, a new infection that they were going to become infectious or contagious, you would see that, you know, their first test might be very low because, like, low viral load because, you know, it's very early on in their infection. But their subsequent tests, you know, they're going, that viral load's going to increase. You know, we all know that as we get sicker and sicker, you know, the bacteria or the virus causing it sort of just increases, increases in amount. So with some sort of repeat testing, you can get a feel for if it's historical or if it's an active infection that we should be cautious of.
So you can only identify an historical case by repeat testing?
Yes.
And it goes to quantity rather than quality of the virus.
Yeah, I mean, you are only just, I mean, you know, there's more, there's larger experiments you could do. I mean, there's things where you can try and culture the virus out of the sample, but, you know, that that requires a lot of intense laboratory work, has a lot of expense. So the fact if you could just take, you know, two samples a couple of days apart and just see how that viral load changes or not over time, it's a much more simple, much more affordable method of doing that rather than doing, you know, more intense laboratory experiments to really, you know, tell what kind of virus is in there.
I was looking at a paper, and this wasn't peer-reviewed, and it suggested that saliva collection has reduced sensitivity relative to nasal pharyngeal swabs. However, it was written by employees of a genomics company with skin in the game of testing for COVID. So do we not believe that?
I mean, this has been a problem. There are so many discordant results, discordant study results, yeah, between just various labs coming out about saliva. And this is what's really made a lot of people very wary about saliva. I mean, saliva is not your traditional diagnostic fluid. I mean, if you think about it, none of us, I think, have been asked at the hospital, at the ER or anything, to ever give a saliva sample to test for infection before. So a lot of people aren't used to working with it. And just because you have a method that works well for a swab, you know, a lot of the time they try and use that exact same method and apply it to saliva. And, you know, it's a different sample type. You know, you can't be guaranteed that that's going to work. So I've actually been working with Steph Tan, who's an incoming MPH student, but is currently based here in Auckland and doing a lot with the COVID testing around New Zealand as well. And, you know, she compiled this really great overview of all of the studies that are being done by comparing saliva and nasopharyngeal swabs. And indeed, you really see what a mixed bag it is. But I think what's really important is to look at the studies where it works, because I think that that really shows the potential for it, and it shows that some labs have figured out how to make it work, and that those are the methods that we should be looking at, and that those who can't make it work should maybe be considering how to better refine their methods to make it work better.
So what was the breakthrough in terms of being able to use saliva as a diagnostic fluid for you?
Actually, I've actually been working with saliva for about the past 10 years in my normal research. So I actually work with a different bacteria. I found very early on in my PhD that saliva worked better than the gold standard nasopharyngeal swab. So I've actually been advocating in saliva in another realm for about 10 years and have not had anywhere as much success as I currently seem to be having. But what that means is that I already had a RNA extraction kit in the lab that I knew worked really well for saliva. And we set up when, you know, as COVID was approaching at Yale, we set up this massive sort of testing response. We wanted to do this really big study and just collect samples from inpatients coming in. We were testing asymptomatic healthcare workers because they had no other way to get tested. So we wanted to make sure that we were making sure our healthcare workers were staying safe and healthy. And it's all a bit of luck. I started working with Nathan Grubau in his lab, and he phoned me, I think it was on a Saturday night. He was like, look, I just cannot get this RNA extraction to work properly, but I know that you said that you've got a really great, you know, way of doing this. Can you come in to lab tonight and can we test these samples? And so I went and grabbed the methods that I work with. You know, we started just comparing that. We got really good results. And, you know, I think it was really a bit of luck that we in the end had a method that I knew worked well on the saliva. It wasn't at all intended to be for saliva in this more COVID research, but it just meant that as we were comparing our sample types, we saw the potential for it that way.
I'm obviously being a bit dense here, but what is the difference in extraction between nasal pharyngeal swab material and saliva?
So, I'm not sure if anyone's seen where your swab goes into, but it sort of goes into this liquid that's almost like just like the consistency of water. So if you can imagine, working with water is pretty straightforward. Now, if you just think about the saliva that's in your mouth, and you know, a little bit like how sticky is that, and how it can vary from day to day, and how maybe it can vary if you're hydrated or not hydrated, or if you're a severely ill patient with COVID, which is a very, you know, mucosal disease, so you get like a lot of mucus, and it just means that saliva is so variable. It can be very sticky. It can be very, you know, more difficult to work with. And so just sort of knowing that, you know, you need to break it down. You need a bit more robust treatment of it to try and sort of break down all that sticky sort of protein that's in it to make, you know, so you can work with it more easily.
And you've been working with saliva for 10 years. Sounds a great career path, doesn't it, really? But what were you testing it for?
Yeah, so I actually work for the bacteria called Streptococcus pneumoniae. So it's a bacteria that causes pneumonia. There's the pneumonia vaccine that's present. It's currently in the vaccination schedule for kids under 2 and also sometimes offered for older adults who might have, you know, respiratory problems. And I'm actually just looking for this bacteria in normal people because this is just a normal bacteria that's around, doesn't cause us much, you know, harm until it gets into the wrong place and can cause disease. And just knowing how much of it in the normal healthy population can really help us understand how the vaccines are working and if there are better vaccination strategies that we could be using. That's what I've been doing, just looking for this bacteria in healthy people.
I mean, we have a terrible rheumatic fever problem in New Zealand. Is your research applicable to that?
No, I know a lot of the work that is being done here. It's really quite impressive. And it's not something I've really sort of crossed paths with at all yet. It's been very, I've just had a very sort of closed research area at the moment, but it's sort of seems to be rapidly expanding at the moment as we sort of think about what other pathogens of interest we could be detecting in saliva, you know, if there's potential for multiple tests that can test for different bacteria and viruses in saliva, and if that can expand our diagnostic options.
Why not? I mean, if you can test for COVID-19, why can't you test for anything?
Exactly. So we're actually at the moment trying to expand our saliva direct assay to test for influenza, especially going into the flu season in the US at the moment. We also want to test for another virus, RSV. It's very common in kids. We're looking to see how we can expand this out and what else we can potentially find with a much easier sample type to collect.
What is RSV?
It's another respiratory virus that can just cause other sort of quite severe respiratory complaints, particularly in children.
There are other saliva tests around. I know that you've got your FDA emergency use authorization. Is your test quite different from the other ones?
Yeah, there's not so many that have received the FDA emergency use authorization. The vast majority of them still have that traditional RNA qPCR test. So, you know, I think our major thing was to remove the RNA step and make our test much cheaper. You know, these tests over in the US are being charged for about $100, $150 a piece. Our test is now being charged, you know, labs can offer it for anywhere from about $5 to $25. So there's other technologies that people are looking into with saliva at the moment as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this really does develop and change things.
And could people theoretically have a home test kit?
I really hope so. So we're actually at the moment, what we're working on at the moment as well is to have at-home sample collection. So the idea that we'll just be able to, people could be able to order a kit into their home, it'll arrive, they'll be able to take their sample. Virus detection in saliva is remarkably stable, you know, at room temperature, at higher temperatures as well. So, they'll be able to take the sample, package it back up, send it to the lab, so they won't even have to leave the home. They won't have to, you know, put healthcare workers at risk. They won't, you know, I mean, but that's still less than ideal. You know, if we can do an at-home test, especially in the US, it's just so desperately needed right now that this is sort of what so many groups are working towards. And I really hope that we'll have something within the coming months that can offer that.
You're planning to go back to Yale, are you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So you don't know how long you're going to be here for?
I'm just here in New Zealand until sort of mid-January, and then as long as my flights stop being cancelled, I'll head back sort of mid-January.
Gosh, I wonder if it'll be a different landscape by the time you get back.
Yeah, it's a bit terrifying to think what's going to happen over the next couple of months. I mean, already this year, I mean, it's already going to be so bizarre coming out of isolation. I mean, I've been I mean, I've been to a supermarket once since March. I've been out for brunch once since March. I've eaten out at a restaurant maybe two or three times. Like, it's just, you know, the lockdowns that we've had, the potential to, you know, cause, you know, spread serious disease from person to person, and also just not knowing how this virus affects each person individually. I mean, it's just not worth putting yourself out there and, you know, not knowing if you'll be fine or if you'll need oxygen or if you'll have, you know, long-term complications. So, yeah, so going back and just seeing the cases already skyrocketing thanks to all of the holiday activities that people are just continuing on, yeah, it's a little bit worrying to know what's going to happen over the next few months.
Are you able to carry on your work while you're here?
Yeah, I am actually. So actually, I'm just sort of catching my US afternoon. So sort of getting up around 6 a.m. just to join in meetings for the rest of the day and then sort of working once they wind down. So, yeah.
It's been very nice talking to you. I hope you have a good break, if a break is what it can be described as. And the best of luck when you get back to the United States.
Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Anne Wiley, who's been working on the saliva test at Yale.